I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today is Anupam Das, an assistant professor in the Department of Computer Science at North Carolina State University. You can find Anupam on LinkedIn and visit his website, anupamdas.org, to learn more about his work. Welcome, Anupam. So happy to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. Anupam, I guess to start off, we're going to discuss a specific study you worked on in a little bit. But do you want to share with us what type of work and research the computer science team is conducting at North Carolina State University?
Yeah, sure. So at NC State, we have several faculty members working in a wide variety of cybersecurity topics, which covers topics such as program analysis, mobile operating systems, web security, telephone network, and 5G communication. We also have faculty members working on cryptography and quantum computing. And we also cover the software security and testing topics. I, on the other hand, primarily focus on the privacy side of things. And so mostly I work on developing privacy-enhancing technologies.
Okay, awesome. And speaking of what you do as an assistant professor, do you teach classes as well as research? And I guess what are those classes like and how's the cybersecurity program at NC State?
Yeah. So yeah, as I said, I primarily focus on the privacy angle. So I teach the privacy course and the course is titled as Privacy in the Digital Age.
Okay.
And this is offered both at the undergraduate and graduate level. And this is basically because we have a cybersecurity track both at the graduate and undergraduate level. And this course is offered as one of the optional courses that the students can take.
Awesome. That's great. And is it a pretty popular, are both programs kind of popular or one more than the other? Or?
Yeah, so I joined NC State around about 2019, and this is when we kind of had to kind of introduce this privacy course. And so from now, so far, we've seen it's quite popular. We get around about 60 on average getting enrolled in both the undergrad and graduate level.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
Great. Well, hopefully that will help with some talent gap issues that we're experiencing.
Yeah, that's kind of the primary focus that we kind of teach them the broad core topics covering the various angles of privacy related challenges that we're facing. And eventually the goal is that we build enough talent that this talent goes to the industry and kind of tackles those challenges.
Excellent. Well, speaking of privacy, let's talk about your study, because I had read a recent article, and I think your study referenced this as well, but I read a recent article about how roughly one in four U.S. adults owns a smart speaker. So for anyone unfamiliar, think Google Home, Amazon Alexa. And Amazon Alexa is certainly at the forefront of those stats with at least what we think 100 million Alexa devices sold. I don't think Amazon has released that. Could be twice that. But Alexa devices have programs that are similar to apps on a smartphone that are called skills. So Anupam, can you tell us more about what skills are and also what prompted you to conduct your study titled, Hey Alexa, is this skill safe? Taking a closer look at the Alexa skill ecosystem.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, as you said that there's voice assistants do support applications and which are typically termed as skills in the context of Alexa. And in the case of Google, I think they call it as actions. So it's basically, it enhances the capability of your voice assistant. So your voice assistant obviously responds to some of your verbal commands, like what is the weather like today, right? And so, and what basically these apps do is basically extend this kind of capabilities and allow developers to kind of build applications that would that would enable users to interact with them through the voice interface. And so, and that's what are basically termed as skills. And one of the main motivations kind of towards looking at this whole project was that initially we had built an IoT lab in NC State where we were trying to analyze the various kind of emerging IoT ecosystems. And obviously voice assistants was one of the common ones just due to the huge popularity and adoptions that it has seen in the last few years. And so we kind of wanted to look into, okay, how are these skills developed? And so we kind of went on ourselves to kind of build some of the skills and see, okay, if I'm a developer, what do I need to submit to kind of get a skill approved. And if I'm a user, if I'm interacting with the skills, what kind of things, what kind of indicators or what kind of informations do I need to provide? And so that kind of prompt us to look at more deeply into this whole ecosystem and the whole process of registering and publishing skills. And that's kind of led to this paper and some of the findings that we report in the paper.
Okay, great. And so what were some of the problems that you and the team found with these skills?
Yeah, so in the paper, we kind of detailed quite a few, quite a lot of interesting points. But I think I'm going to just focus on the three major points that I think are most interesting here.
Sure.
So one of the features in Alexa is that whenever you're interacting with a skill, it basically auto-enables the skill. What does that mean is basically from a usability point of view, you don't have to go and install the skill. So if you think about it in the context of a mobile device, what do? You find an app, you go to the web store, and then you click the install, and then it gets installed in your phone. So kind of to reduce this whole manual process, what Alexa has done is basically if you invoke the right name of the skill, then and if the skill is found, then basically Alexa will automatically enable it in your account and your device. And so that's what it means by auto-enabling feature. But this feature basically also creates another problem. And this is another feature that Alexa has is Alexa supports multiple skills with the same invocation phrase. So for example, there could be there's almost like 86 skills with the same invocation name called as cat facts. And so then there's the problem is which skill is going to get enabled, right? And as an end user, you really don't know until you go and until you kind of invoke it, it gets installed, and then you can obviously go to your companion app and see which skill was being installed. So we found that this auto-enable feature can potentially lead to installing the wrong skill. And that itself can have further ramification in terms of privacy. So that's one thing. The other interesting thing we found was, as a developer, you can actually register your account under any well-known company name. And so we tried out pretty common names such as Samsung, Microsoft, Ring, and Philips. So all of them almost got accepted and was able to publish a skill under that particular developer name, except for one of them, I think. And so that's another issue, because if you think about it from the user's perspective, when you're looking at the skill description and you're seeing a very popular name, so obviously your intuition would be that, okay, this skill is developed by this company, right? Whereas in reality, it is not. So it could potentially facilitate phishing attacks. And so that's another issue that we found. And we think that's an issue because the way the skills are vetted in the backend by Amazon, it is a combination of both automated and manual process. So automated process takes care of whether you've submitted all the information, if the program or properly works or not. But some part is kind of manually vetted, and maybe company name and verifying company name or developer name is something that is manually done. And most likely what happened is that it was overlooked by the person that was vetting it in the backend. And the other last one interesting point, I think, is that as you install, as a developer, when you kind of publish the skills, you can actually register various kind of intents. So now let me explain what intents are. Intents, you can think of intents as like variables within a programming code where you supply the variable to a function, and then the function can execute based on the variables that values that you passed. So in Amazon and Alexa skill, whenever you're interacting with the skills really don't get the raw audio files, right? So the Amazon does not allow you to capture that. So Amazon basically pre-processes that audio file and translates the voice into text. And based on the particular data types, it's going to only send a piece of those information back to the third party or the developer's code. And so what happens is that you can actually register for many of these intents during the registration process, even though you might not be using them. So if somebody was manually interacting with the skills, they might not see some of those data points being requested ever. But once the skills get published, the developers can at the back end basically change the dialogue that is going to be happening with the end user. And some of the dialogues can now trigger some of those intents that was registered. And so this could potentially also be exploited by a developer if they are craft enough to kind of design such skills. I think those were the three, I would say, major findings. There are other interesting findings also in the paper, but I'll not talk about this right now due to the interest of time.
Awesome. And those are really substantial. And I feel like you kind of touched upon how these problems open up vulnerabilities, but how do they, I guess, to really further elaborate, how do these problems open people up, users, to vulnerabilities with their personal data, especially since, and I think you said this in your paper, that most people probably think they're only interacting with Amazon, not necessarily third parties.
Yes. And I think this is another issue. And this is basically because of the introduction of this voice-based interaction. This is new in many ways, right? So we haven't gotten used to it. And maybe a lot of the people have not been, probably don't know all the intricate details of how this whole ecosystem works. And so, and this is why we mentioned this, that we think that a lot of the people are actually think that they're actually interacting with Amazon, not even third parties. And we are actually in the phase of kind of doing another study where we're trying to do this and a user study and kind of see, okay, if users are prompted with this, do they really think, can they distinguish between native applications versus third-party applications? And some of the other indicators that the current ecosystem provides, are they sufficient enough to make an educated decision about which skills to interact with? And I think, it's going to be an issue. I think over time, I think this will get addressed. I think one of the main issues is that this is still new and a lot of the people have just started to just use it, right? And haven't yet understood all the intricate details or implications that could potentially arise. And so over time, I think this will be resolved.
Great. And apart from personal data being collected, people also use Alexa to purchase goods. So are there potential financial security vulnerabilities as well?
Theoretically, you can think of it. It might be possible, depending on which particular skill an end user is trying to activate. So if there are phishing attacks, or we don't call it as a phishing, but it's basically called a squatting attack, where you have similar skills that have similar invocation names, or you can have exactly same duplicate invocation phrases. As I said previously, there are multiple skills with the same name. Mm. So it all depends on if an user accidentally activates a skill that is malicious. And in that case, this could potentially arise. But in our own evaluations of the different skills, we did not find any such vulnerabilities. And so my answer would be theoretically it might be possible, but we didn't find it yet.
Okay. That's reassuring, I guess. and does Amazon, I mean, I think you've also touched on this, but as far as Amazon, they do have some privacy protections in place as well, correct?
Yes. They have certain requirements that you need to fulfill, especially, for example, if a skill is trying to request any sensitive information. So similar to mobile apps, the concept of permissions. There's also the concept of permissions and skills, where the skill might be accessing certain sensitive information, like your name or maybe your address or maybe your account informations, right? And so skills can request those informations, but they need to invoke the proper permission APIs. And so what Amazon has, if any skill is going to be requesting any of those permission protected data types, then they need to provide a privacy policy, for example.
Okay. So the skills, they each have to provide public privacy policies, and those are easily accessible, or what did you find as far as ease? Okay.
I think to some extent they are publicly available on the websites, but there's interesting things here, right? So by default, Amazon does not require all skills to provide a privacy policy, right? Mm-hmm. So it only mandates the privacy policy if during the registration process of a skill, you kind of check box, you basically check mark that you are requesting some permission protected data types. So if you do that, then Amazon will enforce or mandate you to provide a policy link. And but if not, then they would not. But also, even if the mandate a policy links, what we found is that a lot of the policy links are dead, and a lot of the policy links are not forwarding you to the privacy policy. It's just the homepage of some other websites. And so we found some examples of that. So even though they mandated, they're not properly enforcing whether the link is actually containing any privacy policy related text.
Okay, great. And so since Amazon's Alexa and smart speakers in general have become such a staple in our homes, I'm guessing probably even more so with the pandemic and folks sheltering in place, how can we protect ourselves from things like skills vulnerabilities and anything else?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. I think, as I said, this is still kind of an emerging ecosystem right now, and we're going to see more adoption over time, as you mentioned. And so I think from a user's point of view, I think one of the basic things we could do is we can be more vigilant. So if we're interacting with a skill and we feel like the skill is asking for something that doesn't feel right, I think this is a great time to kind of stop and check if you have the right skill being activated, for example. And also, as I said, there are multiple skills that provide you the same functionality. Maybe if you're not happy with the one that is being activated, maybe go and look for alternative ones and manually activate them instead of using the auto-enable feature. So that's one thing you could do. The other thing is that, like we do it also in our smartphone, is we were curious and we want to try out certain new things. And so if that's the case, if you want to just be curious or for fun, you want to install a skill, then that's great. But I think one thing that we should remember is that we should disable them if we're not going to be using them for long term. And many times we forget to install things that we never use again. So that's another good practice maybe we can adopt.
Excellent. Those are great recommendations. And Anupam, are there any other trends in IoT devices that you're going to be studying with your team or researching in 2021 that excite you?
Yeah, so So as I said, we have an IoT lab, and one of our kind of main research thrust is to kind of look at emerging ecosystems. So obviously, we're going to be continuing a little longer on the Amazon Alexa skill projects too. As I said, we're currently looking at a user study to kind of understand people's perception and mental model of how they think these ecosystems work. I think that's going to be another neat project in this domain. And also, we're also looking at, in general, like what the privacy implications of installing a lot of the devices and smart homes, more specifically from a network point of view. So we're looking at network traces and kind of see, okay, what kind of data types are being transmitted? Can we build systems to provide more transparency to the consumers? And eventually, can we build more privacy-enhancing controls to the consumers? I think that's kind of one of our main research thrusts that's going on.
Awesome. Well, that sounds really exciting. Great. Well, Anupam, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your study. I think our listeners will find this really fascinating. So I'm looking forward to future studies from you and the team. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And it's always great to talk about researches that we do to a broader audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Anupam Das, an assistant professor in the Department of Computer Science at North Carolina State University. You can find Anupam on LinkedIn, visit his website, anupamdas.org, and visit NC State University at ncsu.edu to learn more about his work. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.